Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
It's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting dodo birds and leaky black. Matt Norlander's here with me. We're inside State Park, where the men's Final Four is going to happen tomorrow. Game one, Purdue, NC State. Game two, UConn, Alabama. And Norlander, UConn is obviously here as the reigning national champion. They had some travel issues arriving in Arizona, got here late. That's why the Husky players have not met with the media yet here in Arizona. But UConn coach Dan Hurley did yesterday afternoon. You were there. What was your main takeaway from Dan Hurley's media availability?
It was good. I give it a B. By the way, I didn't say this yesterday on the show. To do this pod in person with GP, because we're doing it usually screen to screen, and we're doing multiple shows in person.
It's good to see you.
It's so much better. Like, I love that we actually get to do a few shows face-to-face versus the person here. Hurley, the first question he got asked was by our friend Dan O'Neill, who just simply said, Dan, how was the flight? Calibrate, he cracked a smile, readjusted his hat, head and hands, and, you know, he basically said, you know, after I got through working through all of my emotions and the panic, etc., we are here, it's a blessing, he's right, but he did go into the fact that, and he revealed things that I wasn't aware of, like there was a de-icing situation, and we've been through that.
Oh, sure.
When you are on the tarmac, and it's bad weather, I experienced it flying back from Atlanta earlier this season when you think you're going to be taken off and then that de-icing machine. And it takes a while because they do it once on one side, once on the other. You think, no. They're coming back around. So he said, watching the de-icing was very therapeutic, which I thought was the quote of the media availability so far here. But listen, UConn's going to be good to go. Body clocks are adjusted. The players will meet with the media later today. UConn has the last media availability. They play in the second game on Saturday. And
becomes a little bit of a thing for not much longer, but I'm tell you what, it's Friday, I'm geeked, I'm getting ready.
I thought he handled it beautifully. Acknowledging, yes, it was frustrating and disappointing and complicated and stressful, but we're fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
And that's always the proper approach. I actually, like, understand, because Dan, like, he strikes me, and we both know him, as very self-aware, but complicated. But he knows he's complicated. And so I completely relate to those series of emotions, like frustration, disappointment, stress. You pop off a little bit, which I'm certain he did, and then you realize, okay, look, we're in the air, we're gonna land fine, we're at the Final Four, we got plenty of time to get ready. Let's cool down, make no excuses, and move on. And that's the way he did it. But he has to go through every step of that, it appears, before he can get to that last step of, okay, I'm fine.
Correct. He needed to do that. And oh, by the way, I asked him a question about how they were going to adjust with all that. He had ice packs on his knees. I don't know from what, but he's like taking them all off of his knees. This isn't like, all right, couple straps here, couple straps here. This was like 30 seconds as I was trying to set him up for the... It was a very strange moment. I was like, Dan, do you need a moment? Do you want to wait? He's taking his stride. Hurley is also, in addition to being one of the best coaches, you can make a case he's the best coach in the sport right now with what he's done. A very funny guy, and again, taking it all in stride. I'll also mention this real quick. I want to give a shout-out to Dan Gavitt, who's the president. He oversees basketball for the NCAA, helps basically put on the tournament every single year, oversees the Final Four. And Hurley had mentioned, you know, at 3:30 in the morning local time here, Gavitt made sure, and the whole NCAA welcome crew, as it was for the other three teams, in the dead of night when UConn's plane landed, they had the bus ready to go. They were greeting them the same way they had greeted every other team, which is what you should do, but at least want to give. It's easy to knock on the NCAA. I get all that. They actually run one hell of a tournament. That Gavitt is at the top of that chain, and for him to make sure to be there to greet Hurley and the team, I thought was a class move and kind of, you know, symbolizes how well of a job they do running this tournament. Because of the fact that they had flight issues was not the NCAA's fault. That, you know, you can run into that. They can't exactly say, all right, we need a backup plane number two, a backup plane number three, ready to go at the drop of a hat here. So good on Gavitt and the NCAA welcoming crew to give UConn the proper introduction once they got on the ground.
Classy move, sure. Better than me. I'd have sent a text and said, I'll see you in the morning.
Correct.
I'd send a text and say, I'll see you in the morning. I've heard other people talk about this. We haven't really. But obviously in recent years, we've had some coaching giants leave the sport. Mike Krzyzewski, Roy Williams, Jim Boeheim, our colleague Jay Wright. Dan Hurley is emerging as like can be the next generation of face of college basketball coaching. Do you agree with that assessment? He has set up with the level of success, the dominance, and the personality. And I know it isn't for everybody, but I actually love it and appreciate it, and I think it's great for the sport.
I do as well. I think Dan Hurley has solidified himself already as one of the five biggest faces of the sport. If you wanted to put him in a top three, I think there's a case to be made for that. He does have a thing about him where some people might get tired of his act. I will tell you this. I've known Dan now more than a decade, going back to when I first got to know him when he coached at Wagner. And he is the same person in 2024 that he was in 2014, with actually one exception. He used to be way more ridiculous on the sideline. Like it's still a show. It's still a show, and the facial gestures and all that. I mean, he's told me before. Like I've sent him some gifs of him on Twitter, and I'd send him some. He'd be like, "That's not even in my five most ridiculous." Like he's very aware of that. But he has actually toned it down a little bit because he coaches a blue blood, because you get UConn back in back-to-back Final Fours. Yeah, GP, he's there with Izzo, with Bill Self, anyone really that you want to put on that level. Rick Pitino, you know, Hurley's not in the Hall of Fame now. He's obviously going to the Hall of Fame. He will join his father, who made the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame as a legendary high school coach in Jersey. He'll get there, and I think it's actually a good thing for the sport because he's approachable, he's relatable, he's very human. He talks about his emotions. He talks about battling mania. He talks about trying to get through a lot of these issues that I think everyday people have, and he doesn't ever shy from it. And I think it's a good thing for the sport that he is among the most recognizable guys in the game.
So Dan Hurley is the UConn coach and perhaps the face of this UConn team, certainly as the tournament has unfolded, has become Donovan Clingan. He, of course, is the center. Really interesting story in the sense that he's from Bristol, so inside the state. He spent 4 years at a public high school. He didn't play for the biggest and baddest grassroots programs. He wasn't a McDonald's All-American, but he is arguably now, as a sophomore, the most important player on the best team in the country. How did this happen?
He got on a ramp quicker than even Hurley thought. Quick rewind. I went and saw UConn practice in the preseason last season. So we're talking October of 22, which they would go on to win the national championship, of course. But no one realized it at that point. I remember talking about Hurley with his team and all that stuff. But in that practice, I knew who Clingan was. I caught him on a good day because when I watched it, he was the best player in that practice. And I was like, Dan, what do we have here? And he's like, listen, I'm hoping we get 10 minutes from him a game, give Sanogo a breather. It's wild to me to think back to that, to what he's been able to do. Very humble, super hardworking, never really gave extreme thought to leaving after his freshman season when he was not the factor, GP, but he was a big factor on UConn winning a national championship. And listen, really good conditioning. Remember, he also had a foot issue in the preseason this season, which set back his ramp-up time to becoming an immediate factor right away. So he's battled through injury, excellent rebounder, good instincts, and We won't get too – we're on a tighter podcast schedule than normal, so I'm not going to get too deep into the data dive here. But all of the advanced metrics, and I'm talking about your synergies, your HD intelligences, you look across the board, hoopmath.com. Donovan Klingon's ability to impact the other team's scoring is insane. Like, it is sometimes above what even Zach Edey does, because it's the shots that you never see get taken, and how he basically tilts the floor. You ask how he's done it. Great coaching staff, great personal discipline, rarely takes bad shots, so opportunistic on the floor. It's why he has, in my opinion, clearly played himself to being a top 20 pick a few months from now.
Donovan Klingon and the UConn Huskies will be on the court behind us in our four-hour practice show coming up on CBS Sports Network. That starts live right after we're done here on the Ion College Basketball Podcast. When we come back, big headline this morning in college basketball, and I guess the NBA as well. Bronny James, the son of the NBA's all-time scoring leader, LeBron James, has both entered the NBA draft and the transfer portal. We'll discuss next on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, CBS Sports Network.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
Welcome back to the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast. We're on CBS Sports Network. We're inside State Farm Stadium, where the Final Four will happen tomorrow on the men's side. Meantime, there's other college basketball news happening all around the country. The big headline this morning out of Los Angeles, Bronny James has announced that he will both enter the transfer portal and the 2024 NBA draft. Norlander, I won't ask you if you're surprised by this, because you shouldn't be. Nobody should be. It's been obvious for a while, despite some setbacks, that Bronny James was a likely entrant into the 2024 NBA draft. He can always withdraw. He's leaving open that possibility. But what do you make of Bronny James' decision today to enter the NBA draft?
Well, it comes less than 24 hours removed from, literally on this network, on the podcast, we broke that Eric Musselman was taking the USC job. And so whether or not Musselman got the job, I think this was an inevitability. We're talking about a player who, most importantly, was able to get on the court after having heart failure and collapsing last offseason. So the idea that Bronny James was even cleared and healthy enough to be able to play at a high level in Division I men's college basketball, I never let that stray too far from top of mind there, because it's an amazing story, and there's an easy alternate universe where a very different story is told, and not a tragic one of that. So the fact that he's still here, that's amazing that he's still playing. But we are talking about a guy that averaged fewer than 5 points and 3 rebounds per game. If he wasn't Bronny James, we wouldn't be having this discussion. Duquesne has been linked as a possible transfer destination because Drew Joyce, longtime friends, obviously, with LeBron James, and now he is the head coach at Duquesne. I don't know if Bronny James stays in college basketball, if he truly will go and play at Duquesne in the A-10. Hey, I'd love it. That's borderline driving distance from my house. I couldn't fly out to USC to see Bronny James this past season. Maybe I'll drive out to Duquesne if he winds up going there. But GP, like, you talk to people at the NBA level, like, he's just not an NBA player. So this is a weird one, because I wish nothing but the best for him. And if he winds up making the NBA and having a career, it's incredible. It's unbelievable. But this is a story you hear LeBron talk about. He's like, Bronny's going to make his own decision. And I believe for the most part, LeBron, And Bronny's family, his parents are allowing that. But I just think it's such a massive, it continues to be a massive disservice to him to link him to the possibility that he will play in the NBA because he is not at this stage in his life. I mean, he's nowhere close to being an NBA player.
I agree. It's complicated. It's awkward. And just for clarity's sake, the only reason he has ever been connected to an NBA draft or a mock draft or any of these conversations is because his father, LeBron James, has said for years now that Bronny James is an NBA player, that Bronny James could be a one-and-done player, and has even in this season said Bronny James is better than some people in the NBA right now, that Bronny James could play for the Lakers right now. Respectfully, nobody else thinks any of that's true. Nobody else in the whole world thinks any of that is true. So the obvious question from an outsider might be then, why is a guy coming off USC's bench entering the NBA draft? It's because LeBron James has a player option that he can reject, and LeBron James can enter free agency this summer, and there's some real thought in the league that perhaps the path to getting LeBron James on your team next season will be also having Bronny James on your team next season, whether that's spending a first-round pick on him, a second-round pick on him, or signing him as an undrafted free agent. How big of a story is that going to be as July approaches? Really, even as the NBA draft approaches, because we're not going to be looking at Bronny James trying to figure out where he slots in a traditional way.
Right.
What you will be trying to look at, if he remains in this draft, is, okay, where will a franchise maybe consider taking him, given the possibility that it could also lead to having LeBron James? Just to echo your point, if Bronny James' name was Matt Norlander or Gary Parrish, he would not be in this draft under any circumstances. But because his name is Bronny James and his father is who his father is, here we are.
Here we are, and I mean, so much of this is going to be speculation-based. Like, do we think LeBron James, who is really, set up a mini empire for himself in his post-playing career in Southern California, is going to leave and play somewhere else other than the Lakers? What's amazing about LeBron James is he's still a top 10 player in the NBA and playing as well as he is at this. I mean, it's just absurd. But if you're a franchise and you've got, I mean, maybe you've got two or three more years of really, really good LeBron or LeBron just even playing. I don't think he's going to pull a Tom Brady, right? I mean, he's going to be the wealthiest athlete. I mean, he's basically, it's going to be him and Michael Jordan that are the wealthiest athletes on the planet.
Or anybody who signs with LIV Golf.
Even those guys are sitting at a different table than MJ. But I just, if I'm a GM of a franchise, I'm just not doing this. Like, I get it. You know, if you want to take Memphis or whatever, just to pick your hometown NBA franchise and where you work as well. Do I want LeBron James maybe for 2 years?
We would love it. I don't think I'm going to be able to convince LeBron James to move from Los Angeles to Memphis, Tennessee. But I would love it.
I think the conversation's ridiculous, and I think Bronny James can do whatever he wants with his life. But doesn't it just seem so clear that the developmental path here continue to try and hone your craft in college? Like, he's going to play in the G League. I mean, they folded G League Ignite. Maybe this is the thing that keeps the G League buzzing atop everything, GP. But I'm not seeing it. And I know LeBron desperately wants to play with his son. But at a certain point, I think he's got enough awareness to realize, like, this can really, really go bad. It's already been out of hand to begin with. I don't know. I'd avoid it.
I think the most likely scenario is that Bronny is playing college basketball somewhere next year, or he is playing for the Lakers, and he's just on the Lakers bench the way Giannis's brother is on the Bucks bench, and it'll just be one of those things. But let's talk about this from Bronny's perspective. He's sort of been thrust into this as the father, as the son, rather, of one of the most famous fathers in the world. And listen, LeBron, by all accounts, is an involved father, a great father. Bronny is surrounded by strong parents and a strong family. I'm not here to second-guess anybody. I've got my own kids, and we can all make mistakes some days. But I really have always believed that LeBron so publicly discussing his teenage son's NBA potential when it wasn't clear to anybody else that he actually had NBA potential really put a microscope on Bronny that otherwise would not have been there, and really has created the situation where people like us are debating his talent and his ability And I don't know how much he ever asked for any of this, and it is all the byproduct of the consistent things his dad has said about him over the years. And I just I hope that one day that's not a source of resentment or contention, because I could imagine how it might be.
Yeah, that's a good point to bring up here, because so much of this, some of it's unavoidable, inevitable. LeBron James has his first son, wants to play basketball. He happens to be a very good high school prospect heading into college. That's going to draw a ton of attention and all that. I also would say it hasn't helped matters that he has been closed off. Yeah. LeBronny James was made available to the media exactly once this past season. And so I think the way that he has handled is actually doing a further disservice to him. I wish him nothing but the best. I'd love to see him in college. I'd love to see him get better. Some of this is out of his control. But I think he would have been better served if we had heard more from him, humanized him a little bit more, because when in absence of that, what LeBron James and his family and his handlers have done, they have made him an easier target to, frankly, make fun of, poke at, because he has just been a role player on a terrible USC team that just had its coach bail to go coach at SMU, and now he's in the transfer portal, and a lot of people can say, ha-ha, he's overrated. Some of that is completely not of his own doing, and while LeBron has meant well, he has mishandled some of this, and I think they need to get him in front of a reporter, in front of a camera a bit more often, see a bit more of him, humanize him a little bit more to make this story have a better pathway to wherever he ultimately lands.
Yeah, like, to be clear, like, Bronny James is going to be fine, I think. He has an amazing father, an amazing mother. We'll look up in 5 years, and I'm comfortable he'll be doing something successfully. But I have always wondered what it must be like to hear your very famous father publicly tell the world, my dream is to play in the NBA with my son. And then if you are that son and you are not actually talented enough or developed enough or anything enough to get there, what does that do to a young person when you feel like on some level, if you ever feel this way, that you are falling short of what your father has said is actually his dream? It's just a complicated situation. I hope it ends well. I'm confident it will. And so the next step will be, is Bronny James going to return to college basketball after withdrawing from the NBA draft or decide to stay in? As always, we'll see. When we come back, we'll turn our attention to the CBS Sports All-American teams. They were published yesterday afternoon. Did we get it right? We'll talk about it next. It's the Eye on College Basketball podcast. We're on CBS Sports Network.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast on CBS Sports Network. We are live inside State Farm Stadium, where the Final Four on the men's side will happen tomorrow. Doubleheader, Purdue, NC State, UConn, Alabama. In the meantime, CBS Sports, we have unveiled our 2023-24 All-American teams and our national honors. Obviously, Zach Edey is now a 2-time CBS Sports National Player of the Year. Dan Hurley at UConn was our National Coach of the Year. Reed Shepard at Kentucky, our National Freshman of the Year. And our first team, Zach Edey, obviously the center. He's joined by Jamal Shedd out of Houston, R.J. Davis out of North Carolina, Tristan Newton out of UConn, and Dalton Knecht from Tennessee. Norlander. Did we get it right?
Well, first of all, shouts to GP because he did that off the top of the dome, wasn't looking at his computer. I was like, is he going to get all five? You got all five. Oh, that is correct. Edie and Connect were our only unanimous picks across our organization for as first-team All-Americas. But real quick on the national awards, Zach Edie has been a foregone conclusion. I mean, GP, since the second week of the season.
Feels like it.
It's insane, but congrats to him. It will be made official later this weekend with Naismith, with Wooden. He's going to be the first player since Ralph Sampson 4 decades ago to win back-to-back Naismith Wooden Awards, multi-time National Player of the Year. Edie, congrats. We'll see what he can do here on Saturday and if they can get to Monday night. 2-1 Dan Hurley. There's no doubt about it. He's the National Coach of the Year. You have a case for Painter. And a reminder to our television audience, because I know our pod audience is familiar with this. At CBS, we do this differently. You see our first-team All-Americans if you're watching on YouTube or on CBS Sports Network right now live. We do our voting after the Elite Eight, but before the Final Four. Our ballots are sent that Monday morning after to give enough recognition to what should be recognized NCAA tournament performance, but also still, me personally, I weigh the regular season, call it 90% versus 10%, which is why, spoiler alert, DJ Burns had no shot of making an All-American team, even though he's the star of the tournament here. But credit to Dan Hurley, because he, on the whole, replacing everything that they lost, should be the National Coach of the Year. He won it for us. And then Reed Sheppard, GP, before we get to the All-American teams, Reed Sheppard, there's no freshman that was in this tournament that could possibly have overcome what he did. I mean, he shot better than 50% from three-point range. Kentucky was a loaded offensive team. We'll get to some of our individual ballots there because Reed Sheppard was on my third-team All-America ballot. But he was unbelievable. And the fact that he was this good, being the child of Stacy Sheppard, Jeff Sheppard, both Kentucky legends in their own right, I know this stings for Kentucky fans because he's almost certainly going to the NBA. I mean, he had a terrible game against Oakland, but he projects as a lottery pick. And the fact that you have someone like Reed Sheppard, who is from the state, his family lineage, and you don't win a single postseason game, it's a bummer. It's a stinger. Before we talk All-American teams, just I assume you also voted for Reed Sheppard, and I assume our ballots are identical. Edie, Hurley, Sheppard.
Yeah, I do think there are multiple options for Coach of the Year. Matt Painter would be an option. You could make Danny Sprinkle an option. Yep. Kelvin Sampson an option. But I think at the end of the day, when there is a man out there who won a national championship, lost three of his top six scorers, including two top 40 NBA draft picks, one of whom was selected in the lottery, and neither of those players was actually the most outstanding player of last season's Final Four, that's Adama Sanogo, and he was lost as well. And you come back, replace those guys, run through the Big East, run through the Big East tournament, run through the NCAA tournament so far, I think ultimately you got to hand the Coach of the Year award to Dan Hurley. Player of the Year, there's no other alternative option. Like, you could get cute if you wanted to, but if you turn in a ballot that doesn't have Zach Edey at the top, you're being nonsensical. And then Freshman of the Year, I guess you could go a lot of different ways, but Reed Sheppard was the proper pick. He came off Kentucky's bench, and Kentucky went home earlier than most of us thought it would, but still, ultimately, among all the freshmen in college basketball, I do think Reed Sheppard had the best season.
Yeah, and by the way, we occasionally ask our listeners for a little help, because I thought about this when I sent the ballot in, and frankly, we've been so busy, I haven't looked. He came off the bench.
Yeah.
I want to know the last time a National Freshman of the Year of any kind came off the bench for his team. If it's happened, I'd love to know. Be sure to find us. Find the show. Shouts to the show. Okay, first team All-America. It's really, there's just not a debate. I mean, Edie, obviously, Connect, not only the second best player, he was also the transfer of the year, clearly. Tristan Newton has been the most important player on UConn's roster. He had to be represented here, especially with UConn making the Final Four. Jamal Shedd, if he doesn't get hurt, are we even talking about NC State? Like, credit to NC State for what it did, but that enabled Duke to get past Houston. If you watch Houston, Jamal Shedd, one of the most ferocious, reliable on-ball defenders in the entire country. Shedd's a first-teamer. Newton, and then RJ Davis, who did not end the season well, but again, like, we respect what happens in the regular season, in the conference tournament. To me, it was close. Davis was my fifth pick for the first team. Before we get to teams two and three, just your thoughts on the five we had, because I think they matched the AP All-America, and this felt like a year where sometimes that fourth or fifth guy might be in debate with the first or second guy on the second team, but to me, it wasn't too hard of a call.
I have no issues with the first team. I do think there's kind of a debate for the fifth spot, and it is the byproduct of us not voting until after the Elite Eight. Could Mark Sears at Alabama have a case?
I think he has a case. He was on my second team. He's on the CBS Sports All-America second team. Really, really good player. He has a case. I just, on the whole, on the balance, and trust me, Sears has stats in his favor versus Davis head-to-head. Having watched both these teams, I felt like UNC as a one seed relied more on the play of Davis across the entire season, narrowly, but more than Sears with Alabama.
And on that note, I think also a byproduct of us not voting until after the Elite Eight, we are going to be one of the few entities, it appears, that has Donovan Klingon labeled as an All-American. Most All-American teams that have already come out because the votes were tabulated before the NCAA tournament, Klingon does not appear, but we have him. And I think when we look back on that all those years later, it'll look smart.
Well, and like, well, we were the only, and listen, I'm not a pat GP on the back here. I'm truly not trying to pat ourselves on the back, but I do like this for posterity's sake. Like last year, we were the only entity that had Dusty May as the National Coach of the Year. He took FA. We could look up in 6 years and FAU hasn't made a tournament since Dusty May left. It only makes sense that he was the National Coach of the Year, even in a season when Dan Hurley won the national championship. Now that's represented with him getting Coach of the Year. I'm going to read off our second and third teams real quick for everyone. Second team All-America for CBS Sports, Terrence Shannon Jr. of Illinois, Mark Sears of Alabama, Tyler Kolick of Marquette, Jaden Ledee at San Diego State, Kyle Filipowski of Duke was second team. And our third team, Deron Holmes, the second from Dayton, Hunter Dickinson, who I've seen walking around Arizona like five times. He was on HQ. He's on our third team. Baylor Shireman of Creighton, Caleb Love of Arizona, and Donovan Klingon. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, you can see the teams right there. Klingon is on the third team. Yeah, Klingon's got to be there. Undeniable. His impact is huge. Real quick for me on the second team and third team, then I'm going to toss it back to GP. And I want to get a guy that we didn't make our list here. Shannon obviously had a season draped in rightful controversy. But his play, despite everything that was happening off the floor with his alleged rape allegation and that thing still needing to be settled when we get to May, his play, he was a second-team All-American, kind of undeniable purely in terms of on-court production there. We talked about Sears. Tyler Kolick, critical player, was top three in the country in assists. To me, it was a no-brainer to have him second-team. Jaden Ledee was these until about 2.5 weeks ago, I actually thought he might have been the sleeper guy to get on the first team. Clear on second team. And then Filipowski, his biggest news item, GP, was being involved in the court storm at Wake Forest, but he was, the stats backed it up, he was a big time player there. Holmes, Dickinson, Shireman, Caleb Love, who I did not have on my ballot, and Klingon on third team. Real quick thoughts on either of those two sets of five before we get to the guy that did not make the
list. Well, again, I mean, we can nitpick it, and you know, these ballots come from a lot of different places. It's not just you and I.
It's not.
But I got no real issues with the second team or the third team. I will say, after I tweeted our teams yesterday, I was not bombarded, but I did get a few replies from what appears to be Providence fans
asking me
about Devin Carter.
Yes.
We did not put him on our first team, second team, or third team. And the first tweet I saw, I think, was, not having Devin Carter on one of these teams is a felony. And I said, oh, Lord, have I committed a felony? Have I committed a felony by leaving Devin Carter
off
the list? And then maybe I have. And then the next tweet I saw was, how could you leave the Big East Player of the Year off of your All-American teams? And at that point, I went, did Devin Carter win Big East Player of the Year? All right, how'd that happen? Because that's not... How did that happen?
I'm pretty sure I brought it up on a podcast, by the way, at one point.
I might not have been paying
attention.
That's
funny. Very valid case. So the two players that I had on my ballot that didn't make our All-America team, I had Kentucky's Antonio Reeves' third team, and I had three. I had Antonio Reeves, Reed Shepard, and Devin Carter. If you're the best freshman in the country, and Reed Shepard was amazing, I figured he had to be third team. But Antonio Reeves was the best player for Kentucky this season. So weirdly enough, a Kentucky team that couldn't get out of the first round, I had two third-team All-Americans. And yes, I had Devin Carter. In my opinion, Devin Carter, and this doesn't influence how I vote, I think we're going to look up in 8-9 years, and Devin Carter is going to be a reliable NBA starter. He's one of the five best defenders in the country. And I think because being a great defender is something that people don't immediately see or recognize, unless you're just a shot-blocking menace or you're constantly talked about it. I think his defense is underrated, not by people who know and love and follow the game, but between that. And remember, he won Big East Player of the Year by vote of the coaches in the league because he carried... Remember, Bryce Hopkins went out for Providence, and PC fans, shout out to you. We're giving you a little bit of love here on the Friday before the Final Four because you deserve it. Carter was the centerpiece on a PC team that I thought had a a true case to make the tournament. Now, it didn't, but with everything he did, I thought Carter should have been a 13-team All-American. He was on my ballot, but across the voting with us, he just missed out.
Yeah, I guess my surprise is that you typically aren't going to see an All-American or a Conference Player of the Year in a league where the number one team in the country is in the league, two other top 15 teams are in the league, and you've got options from each of those teams to hand the award to. Like, I would have voted Tristan Newton at UConn, Big East Player of the Year. I had him as a first-team All-American.
I think him and Klingon stole each other's votes. I think that was
possibly
part of it.
That one. Tyler Kolick had another terrific year. Ryan Kalkbrenner, Baylor Shireman.
The league was loaded. How many teams made the tournament? Just three. By the way, shouts to Seton Hall, Shaheen Holloway winning a great NIT.
Yes. And having a wonderful moment post-game with Robbie Allen.
Yes.
It was a really,
awesome.
Really sweet moment. But back to Providence, I guess this is, I'd bottom line it this way. My commentary has nothing to do with Devin Carter as a player. He's obviously a fabulous college basketball player, and I believe he will be in the NBA as well. It's just that Providence finished sixth in the Big East, went to the NIT, and I don't think there's any player on my ballot from a team that didn't make the NCAA tournament. I put a priority on team success, obviously, and you could cut this a few different ways. I'm saying I left Devin Carter off of my ballot because Providence didn't make the NCAA tournament, at least in part. And what a Providence fan would say, or if I were arguing against myself, I'd say, he's the only reason we even came close
to
making the NCAA tournament, which is a totally fair argument.
No, absolutely. But a really good season. By the way, Kim English, it was announced short before we went live, contract extension at Providence as well. We'll see what the Friars can do. But no, I had Reeves, Klingon, Filipowski, Shepard, Carter on my third team. I actually put Deron Holmes on my second team. He was 13 overall there. Really good year for talent across the sport. Tough voting. The first team I didn't have trouble with. It was second team, then third team, trying to decipher there. But overall, no huge qualms. And now, that's behind us. And we get ready to continue to ramp up with the Final Four. And we still have the carousel of GP is still spinning.
It is still spinning. Obviously, yesterday, USC gets filled with Eric Musselman. You know what that means. Arkansas is now open. We'll discuss the coaching carousel next here on the Ion College Basketball Podcast. We're on CBS Sports Network. Welcome back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. We're on CBS Sports Network. We are live from State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona, where the Men's Final Four will take place tomorrow. We got a four-hour practice show coming up on CBS Sports Network just as soon as we're done, so stick around for that. Norlander, while we're here in Arizona, coaching carousel continues to spin. The latest actual news, Josh Schertz from Indiana State wins an NIT, and now he's headed to St. Louis. How did that happen?
Yeah, he is headed to St. Louis. Indiana State had a phenomenal 32-win season. Came down to the final play at Hinkle Fieldhouse on Thursday night against Seton Hall. Josh Schertz had been the buzziest mid-major name not named Dusty May on this cycle here. St. Louis put a high priority on him weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks ago. It has been patiently waiting it out. I had the story last night. An hour after the game ended. But here's the deal. Indiana State is going to try and make a last-second lifetime contract offer. As you well know, the reality is St. Louis is a better job in a better league. Sources told me Schertz stands to make north of $2 million in salary annually. Indiana State, that's going to more than triple his salary there. NIL, huge commitment. So with him going to St. Louis, which has been expected, it was one of those weird ones where there's a hot candidate, there's an obvious job, the season keeps going and going and going, and the job doesn't fill. Not that hard to put the pieces together. Schertz, as we talk here in real time on CBS Sports Network, if he has not officially informed Indiana State by this hour, which I believe he has, he will be soon saying that he will be going and taking the St. Louis job. That's a really good get for St. Louis, and we'll see who Indiana State can get to replace him. But he had an awesome three-year run there. Former D2 coach, and he's off to the A-10.
Obviously, he had been connected to this job for a while. He had also been a candidate at other jobs.
Yes.
This almost feels like, excuse the analogy, but he got asked to the prom a few weeks ago, and he was like, sure, I'll go with you. Sounds great. And then some other people started with like, hey, you got a date for the prom?
Right,
and he
had
to maybe say no over the past few weeks. Do you think it's possible he agreed to this job, too early?
I personally, having tracked this, so Oklahoma State, Louisville, Vandy all approached his representation. He had various.
I guess, then I don't mean to interrupt, but I guess what some people are thinking is this is a good job,
yeah.
But is it the best job this guy could have got?
I do wonder if, now listen, Pat Kelsey is at Louisville. I actually think he wound up being the most accomplished, best option for them after they missed on Dusty May. I do think, I wonder if there's a sliding door situation where, I mean, I reported this in real time. Louisville was still trying to figure out a way to potentially get Josh Schertz the gig on the day when it agreed to have Pat Kelsey there. But complications with Indiana State's season still going. St. Louis waiting in the background. That was also something there. But I think, and if you talk to Schertz, I think he would agree with this. The best job for him right now might just be go to St. Louis for a year, two, or three. Maybe you absolutely hit it out of the park there. And then we look up 3 years from now, and he's had an even better job. That's an even better fit. So we wait and see on all that. Also, okay, Eric Musselman has left Arkansas for USC. That became official shortly after we broke it on the podcast on Thursday. Intrigued to see how that works. He has Southern California ties. I think there's a good chance, but that's a very, very tough job. Now, GP, before I give you a few names, the fact that a coach would leave Arkansas for USC, they're not even in the same realm as in terms of job prestige. Surprised or not surprised? And two, in your opinion, like, what kind of guy should Arkansas be trying to bring in to replace Muss, whose presence, energy, like, I don't want to say he's one of one because he's not, but there are not a lot of coaches in the industry that are like Muss, and now Arkansas has to try and bring someone in who can keep the glory going the way that Muss did, getting 3 second weekends and 3 straight tournaments.
Well, let me answer your first question first.
Okay.
I'm not surprised that Muss is leaving Arkansas for USC, because I know if you or I or anybody else who works in this industry were ranking basketball jobs today, like, hey, just give me your best jobs, we'd probably start with Duke, and we'd get to Kentucky and North Carolina and Kansas pretty quickly, and then we'd go to our list. We'd get to Arkansas before we got to USC. We just would. But let me ask you this. Is it clear to you that you can do more at Arkansas than you can do at USC right now? Just because you've done what has been done at Arkansas, what prevents Muss from literally replicating it at USC, provided he has NIL money that you need in this era of college athletics to flourish at the power conference level? Obviously, USC making a conference move, that's a big step.
Yeah,
but
huge.
If some of this just comes down to, he's from Southern California. Hey, where you want your family to be, Los Angeles or Fayetteville, Arkansas?
Yeah.
That's not a hard choice for a lot of people. So that plays a role here. But just, I guess, I hear people say accurately, Arkansas is the better job. I agree. But I don't know why, if Muss has NIL deals available to him, I don't know why you can't win big at USC. They have recruited 5-star players there, Evan Mobley, Bronny James. I don't know why you can't win big at USC, even though maybe nobody's quite done it consistently yet.
It's hard. That USC, trivia time.
Okay.
Last time USC won a regular season conference championship.
Oh, I'm going to say that was probably, did Andy Enfield never do it?
He never did it.
I'm going to say 1972.
1985 was the last time USC won a regular season championship, and I think we might go at least three more decades before it happens again, because they're going to the
what?
Big Ten. They're going to the Big Ten. I mean, this job falls way, way down the pecking order. Maybe on Muss. I'll be quick here on Arkansas. Names I'm hearing, talk to sources in the past. I don't even, GP, I'm losing track of time, 12 hours or so. Chris Beard has legitimate interest at Ole Miss. We'll see on that. I think there would be a genuine pushback given Chris Beard's history, but we'll see. They have interest. Jerome Tang from Kansas State. I almost wonder, weirdly, Buzz Williams was an initial candidate for USC. Might he be in there? I'm getting mixed signals on whether Will Wade would have a viable candidacy there. We'll see. But Beard and Tang feel like the two names that are out in front the most on that. We wait and see on it. It's a top 20 job in the sport. The fan base is so passionate. USC, they don't fill more than half the building. Now, maybe Muss changes that, but Arkansas is such a prestigious job. And in SEC, oh, by the way, Texas, Oklahoma are incoming. So we'll wait and see on that. And then before we get out, two shows in a row, a small coaching nugget here that we'll break. It's a small one, but Cornell is set to hire John Jakes, who was an assistant on staff there. We're told that will be made official later on Friday. I bring this up not just because it's a coaching hire and another one off the list, but this is true. Before I got to CBS, once upon a time, I had an independent website called College Hoops Journal. It actually helped me get this blessed gig. Shouts to you, EK. And I even had Gary Parrish on the College Hoops Journal podcast, but he has no memory of this. But after I got to CBS, College Hoops Journal existed for about 2 more years. I had people writing for it, stringing for it. John Jakes wrote for College Hoops Journal at the very, very start of his coaching career after he graduated from Cornell. He was on that Cornell team that made the 2010 tournament. So I'm proud to say someone literally did stringing beat writing duty for me once upon a time and now going to be a Division I head coach. That's really, really
cool. Congratulations to him and congratulations to you. When we come back, one more segment to go. We're going to spend it on the Women's Final Four because that's tonight. We'll talk Women's Final Four next. Ion College Basketball Podcast. We're on CBS Sports Network. Welcome back to the Ion College Basketball Podcast. We are live in State Farm Stadium, Glendale, Arizona, where right behind us, the four members of this Final Four are going to be practicing for an hour each. Coming up next, we'll have March Madness 360 right here on CBS Sports Network, so no need to go anywhere. Norlander, before we get out of here, the Women's Final Four is tonight, and it is the biggest one in history. Game one, South Carolina against NC State. Dawn Staley's team is listed as an 11.5-point favorite in this one, so I think I know who you're picking, but let's just get it on record. Yeah. South Carolina, NC State, Women's Final Four, who you taking tonight?
I love that we're giving a little quick shine here to the Women's Final Four because there will be people across the city, across the country dialed into this. Shouts to Camila Cardoso, who doesn't get nearly as much love as she should. Dawn Staley, obviously the face of that program. Got to go South Carolina, overwhelming favorite. Really awesome storyline there, yet to lose this season.
Obviously, South Carolina's got to be the pick. It doesn't mean South Carolina will win the game, but when you got an undefeated team that's a double-digit favorite, that's probably who's going to win the game and advance to the national championship contest. Then the nightcap tonight, and woo, buddy, this is great. Paige Beckers in UConn on one side, Caitlin Clark in Iowa on the other. Iowa was a 1.5-point favorite. That number has now moved to 3.5. Are we headed for Caitlin Clark in the national championship game for the second straight year?
You know what? I'm going to pick against it. I think we're going to get the UConn Huskies in two national championship games. Gino Auriemma, the most accomplished coach in the history of college basketball. You got Paige Beckers, who was Caitlin Clark before Caitlin Clark. Hannah Stolke. I think with Caitlin Clark needing Stolke to show up big, you'll have Beckers having a huge night. I like him. I like UConn close. I like him close, but I don't know if Clark alone can pull them to a title game, so I will take UConn close. I know you're taking Iowa, aren't you?
I just want what would be the biggest thing on Sunday. And the biggest thing we could have on Sunday for women's basketball, for the sport of basketball, would be Caitlin Clark in Iowa against undefeated South Carolina. So that's what I'm picking. Iowa over UConn tonight. And then real quick, championship game. Do you have South Carolina as your national champion?
I will take South Carolina to win it, be an undefeated champion. Dawn Staley's legend only grows from there. Yes.
I agree. Iowa, South Carolina in the title game. I think South Carolina wins it. And with that, shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry Teagle. He's a legend. Shouts to Huck and Larnell. And thank you guys once again for watching the Ion College Basketball Podcast. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple and Spotify. And we will talk to you again on Monday on CBS Sports Network. Till then, take care.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes, you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.